Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Watson in the Ten Commandments book. Last time we finished the Tenth Commandment, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's, Exodus 20, verse 17. And that finished the overall section of the book regarding the actual Ten Commandments. And now, Lord willing, we're going to start a new overall section called the Law and Sin. And the first part of that is man's inability to keep the moral law. And so I'll actually go ahead and start that. Number one, man's inability to keep the moral law. Question, is any man able perfectly to keep the commandments of God? Answer, no mere man since the fall is able in this life perfectly to keep the commandments of God, but does daily break them in thought, word, and deed. In many things we offend all, James 3, verse 2. Man in his primitive state of innocence was endowed with ability to keep the whole moral law. He had rectitude of mind, sanctity of will, and perfection of power. He had the copy of God's law written on his heart. No sooner did God command, but he obeyed. As the key is suited to all the wards in the lock and can open them, so Adam had a power suited to all God's commands and could obey them. Adam's obedience ran parallel with the moral law as a well-made dial goes exactly with the sun, like a sundial, I guess. Man in innocence was like a well-tuned organ. He was sweetly in tune to the will of God. He was adorned with holiness as the angels, but not confirmed in holiness as the angels. He was holy, but mutable. He fell from his purity, and we with him. Sin cut the lock of original righteousness where our strength lay. It brought a languor and faintness into our souls, and has so weakened us that we shall never recover our full strength till we put on immortality. What I am now to demonstrate is that we cannot yield perfect obedience to the moral law. Overall point, Roman numeral number one. The case of an unregenerate man is such that he cannot perfectly obey all God's commands. He may as well touch the stars or span the ocean as yield exact obedience to the law. A person unregenerate cannot act spiritually. He cannot pray in the Holy Ghost. He cannot live by faith. He cannot do duty out of love to duty. And if he cannot do duty spiritually, much less perfectly. Now, that a natural man cannot yield perfect obedience to the moral law is evident, number one, because he is spiritually dead. Ephesians 2, verse 1. How can he, being dead, keep the commandments of God perfectly? A dead man is not fit for action. A sinner has the symptoms of death upon him. He has no sense. He has no sense of the evil of sin, of God's holiness and veracity. Therefore, he is said to be without feeling, Ephesians 4:19. He has no strength, Romans 5, verse 6. What strength has a dead man? A natural man has no strength to deny himself or to resist temptation. He is dead, and can a dead man fulfill the moral law? Number two, a natural man cannot perfectly keep all God's commandments because he is born in sin and lives in sin. Psalm 51:5, he drinketh iniquity like water. Job 15:16, all the imaginations of his thoughts are evil and only evil. Genesis 6, verse 5. The least evil thought is a breach of the royal law, and if there be defection, there cannot be perfection. As a natural man has no power to keep the moral law, so he has no will. He is not only dead, but worse than dead. A dead man does no hurt, but there is a life of resistance against God that accompanies the death of sin. A natural man not only cannot keep the law through weakness, but he breaks it through willfulness. We will do whatsoever goeth out of our own mouths to burn incense unto the Queen of Heaven, Jeremiah 44, verse 17. And that's the end of Roman numeral 1, the overall point. The unregenerate man is such he cannot perfectly obey all God's commands. Overall point number 2, as the unregenerate cannot keep the moral law perfectly, so neither can the regenerate. There is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not, nay, that sins not in doing good, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 20. There is that in the best actions of a righteous man that is damnable. It's in there. If God should weigh him in the balance of justice. Alas, how are his duties fly blown? He cannot pray without wandering, nor believe without doubting, at least to some degree. To will is present with me, but how to perform it I find not. In the Greek it is how to do it thoroughly I find not, Romans 7:18. Paul, though a saint of the first magnitude, was better at willing than at performing. Mary asked where they had laid Christ, for she had a mind to have carried him away, but she lacked strength. So the regenerate will have a will to obey God's law perfectly, but they want or lack strength. Their obedience is weak and sickly. The mark they are to shoot at is perfection of holiness, but though they take a right aim, yet do what they can, they come short of the mark. The good that I would, I do not, Romans 7:19. A Christian, while serving God like a ferryman that plies the oar and rows hard, is hindered, for a gust of wind carries him back again. So says Paul, the good I would, I do not. I am driven back by temptation. Now, if there be any failure in a man's obedience, he cannot be a perfect commentary upon God's law. The Virgin Mary's obedience was not perfect. She needed Christ's blood to wash her tears. Aaron was to make atonement for the altar to show that the most holy offering has defilement in it and needs atonement to be made for it, Exodus 29:37. Question, if a man has no power to keep the whole moral law, why does God require it of him? Is this justice? The answer, though man has lost his power of obeying, God has not lost his right of commanding. If a master entrusts a servant with money to lay out, and the servant spends it dissolutely, may not the master justly demand it? God gave us power to keep the moral law, which by tampering with sin we lost, but may not God still call for perfect obedience, or in case of default, justly punish us? Question, why does God permit such an inability in man to keep the law? Answer, he does it, number one, to humble us. Man is a self-exalting creature, and if he has but anything of worth, he is ready to be puffed up. But when he comes to see his deficiencies and failings, and how far short he comes of the holiness and perfection which God's law requires, it pulls down the plumes of his pride and lays them in the dust. He weeps over his inability. He blushes over his leprous spots. He says with Job, I abhor myself in dust and ashes. Number two, God lets this inability be upon us that we may have recourse to Christ to obtain pardon for our defects and to sprinkle our best duties with his blood. When a man sees that he owes perfect obedience to the law but has nothing to pay, it makes him flee to Christ to be his friend and answer for him all the demands of the law and set him free in the court of justice. Use number one. Here is matter of humiliation for our fall in Adam. In the state of innocence, we were perfectly holy. Our minds were crowned with knowledge, and our wills, as a queen, swayed the scepter of liberty. But now we may say, the crown has fallen from our head, Lamentations 5:16. We have lost that power which was inherent in us. And again, that was just in Adam at the beginning. When we look back to our primitive glory, when we shone as earthly angels, we may take up Job's words, oh, that I were as in months past, chapter 29, verse 2. Oh, that it were with us at first, when there was no stain upon our virgin nature, when there was a perfect harmony between God's law and man's will. But alas, how is the scene altered? Our strength is gone from us. We tread awry at every step. We come below every precept. Our dwarfishness will not reach the sublimity of God's law. We fail in our obedience, and while we fail, we forfeit. This should put us in deep mourning, M-O-U-R-N, and spring a leak of sorrow in all our souls. Use number two of confutation. Number one, it confutes the Arminians who cry up the power of the will. They hold that they have a will to save themselves. But by nature, we not only want or lack strength, but we want or lack will to do that which is good. Romans 5, verse 6. The will is not only full of weakness, but obstinacy. Israel would none of me. Psalm 81, verse 11. The will hangs forth a flag of defiance against God. Such as speak of the sovereign power of the will, forget it is God that worketh in you both to will and to do. Philippians 2:13. If the power be in the will of man, then what need is there for God to work in us to will? If the air can enlighten itself, what need is there for the sun to shine? Such as talk of the power of nature and their ability to save themselves disparage Christ's merits. I may say, as Galatians 5:4, Christ has become of no effect to them. They who advance the power of their will in matters of salvation without the medicinal grace of Christ do absolutely put themselves under the covenant of works. I would ask, can they perfectly keep the moral law? Evil is manifested in any blemish at all. If there be but the least defect in their obedience, they are lost. For one sinful thought, the law of God curses them, and the justice of God condemns them. Confounded be their pride, who cry up the power of nature, as if, by their own inherent abilities, they could rear up a building, the top whereof should reach to heaven. Number two, it confutes that sort of people who brag of perfection, and who, according to that principle, can keep all God's commandments perfectly. I would ask such whether at no time a vain thought has come into their minds. If there has, then they are not perfect. The Virgin Mary was not perfect. Though her womb was pure, being overshadowed by the Holy Ghost, yet her soul was not perfect. Christ tacitly supposes a failing in her, Luke 2:49. And are they more perfect than the Blessed Virgin was? Such as hold perfection need not confess sin. David confessed sin, and Paul confessed sin, Psalm 32:5 and Romans 7:25. But they are got beyond David and Paul. They are perfect. They never transgress. And where there is no transgression, what need for confession? Again, if they are perfect, they need not ask pardon. They can pay God's justice what they owe. Therefore, why pray, forgive us our debts? Oh, that the devil should rock men so fast asleep as to make them dream of perfection. Do they plead, let us therefore as many as be perfect be thus minded? Philippians 3:15. Perfection there is meant of sincerity. God is best able to interpret his own word. He calls sincerity perfection, a perfect and upright man, Job 1:8. But who is exactly perfect? A man full of diseases may as well say he is healthful as a man full of sins say he is perfect. That's the end of use number two. Use number three, for encouragement to regenerate persons, though you fail in obedience and cannot keep the moral law exactly, yet be not discouraged. Question, what comfort may be given to a regenerate person under the failures and imperfections of his obedience? Answer, that a believer is not under the covenant of works, but under the covenant of grace. The covenant of works requires perfect, personal, and perpetual obedience. But in the covenant of grace, God will make some abatements. He will accept less than he required in the covenant of works. And that's from the individual. He still required perfect obedience, but that was accomplished only by Christ. continuing on, number one, in the covenant of works, God required perfection of degrees. In the covenant of grace, he accepts perfection of parts. There he required perfect working. Here he accepts sincere believing. In the covenant of works, God required us to live without sin. In the covenant of grace, he accepts of our combat with sin. Number two, though a Christian cannot in his own person perform all God's commandments, yet Christ, as his surety and in his stead, has fulfilled the law for him, and God accepts of Christ's obedience, which is perfect, to satisfy for that obedience, which is imperfect. Christ being made a curse for believers, all the curses of the law have their sting pulled out. Number three, though a Christian cannot keep the commands of God to satisfaction, yet he may to approbation. And the question, how is that? And his answer is number one, he gives his full assent and consent to the law of God. The law is holy and just. There was assent in the judgment, Romans 7:12. I consent unto the law. There was consent in the will, Romans 7:16. So he assented that the law is holy and just, and he consents to the law. Number two, a Christian mourns that he cannot keep the commandments fully. When he fails, he weeps. He is not angry with the law because it is so strict, but he is angry with himself because he is so deficient. Number three, he takes a sweet, complacent delight in the law. I delight in the law of God after the inward man, Romans 7:22. In the Greek, I take pleasure in it. Oh, how I love thy law, Psalm 119:97. Though a Christian cannot keep God's law, yet he loves his law. Though he cannot serve God perfectly, yet he serves him willingly. Number four, it is his cordial desire to walk in all God's commands. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep thy statutes, Psalm 119, verse 5. Though his strength fails, yet his pulse beats. Number five, he really endeavors to obey God's law perfectly, and wherein he comes short, he runs to Christ's blood to supply his defects. This cordial desire and real endeavor God esteems as perfect obedience. If there be a willing mind, it is accepted, 2 Corinthians 8, verse 12. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, Canticles 2, verse 14. And again, that's Song of Solomon 2, 14. Though the prayers of the righteous are mixed with sin, yet God sees they would pray better, if they could. He picks out the weeds from the flowers. He sees the faith and bears with the failing. The saint's obedience, though short of legal perfection, yet having sincerity in it, and Christ's merits mixed with it, finds gracious acceptance. When the Lord sees endeavors after perfect obedience, he takes it well at our hands, as a father who receives a letter from his child, though there be blots in it and false spellings, takes all in good part. Oh, what blottings are there in our holy things! But God is pleased to take all in good part. He says, it is my child, and he would do better if he could. I will accept it. All right, and that is the end of that that first section in this new overall section, the law and sin, man's inability to keep the moral law. And Lord willing, we will plan to go on to the next one next time. But until then, go in loving God's law and in a hearty desire to keep it with Christ's help, but relying only on Christ's righteousness and his perfect keeping of the law. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.